Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. The volunteers of Jaws of Justice Radio want to thank and congratulate all those who worked so hard to overturn Missouri's lifetime ban on food stamps for those who have paid their debt and returned to society with a conviction for drug use. We feel this will help those affected and our community as a whole heal from the mistakes of the past and build a brighter future for all of us. Today, hosts Cassandra Mitchell and Liz Henry talk with Royals Hall of Famer Willie Wilson about his struggle with drugs and what effect being in the spotlight had on his efforts to recover. Then, in the second half of our show, we will open the phone lines for your questions and comments. As always, stick around after the show for the 420 Drug War News. Now, to Cassandra, Liz, and their guest, Willie Wilson.
Hi, my name is Cassandra Mitchell, and I'm here with Liz Henry on Recovery Talk at Jaws of Justice Radio. Our guests today are Willie Wilson, former Royals player, Hall of Famer, and Hugh O'Donnell, chairman of the board at First Call. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks.
Good. Welcome, and we would like to ask Willie, first of all, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. It's good to be here.
And
Well,
you don't need too much of an introduction, but for those tuning in that don't know, would you tell us a little bit of background information?
I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, left there at a very young age and grew up in New Jersey, Summit, New Jersey, small little town. We don't call it a city because it's a little space. And kind of played some sports there and had a great time. Grew up with some very nice people. It was more of a suburban area. And all the people that were surrounding me were very positive. And sports was something that I enjoyed, and it's something that got me to the position I'm in today. So that's a little quick background right there.
Okay. And we had asked a little bit before, because we're going to go into your addiction and recovery story. And so you had said, and this was a question we had asked prior to the show, there was really no, you didn't grow up with alcohol and drugs in the home.
No. The only person that really, it was my mom, my grandmother, my brother, and myself. And my mom didn't drink. I didn't drink. My brother didn't drink. My grandmother, she had a couple pops every now and then. But that's what she grew up doing in her time of coming up. So there really wasn't that much. And unfortunately, my grandmother's passed, my mom's passed, and my brother's passed. So I'm the only one that's left on the immediate family. So that wasn't a problem. My problem was getting into the major leagues. And if I can go back a little bit, when I was coming up in the minor leagues, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke. I was a pure athlete, and I got corrupted in the big leagues.
And that was what Liz and I had talked about as well, that it seemed, so without that background, you come in, you're doing what you love, you're getting paid to do what you love,
right.
And you know you have to be in tip-top shape.
Right.
And so minor leagues, you kept it clean.
Right.
And where did it change when you got to the majors?
Well, you know, in my book, I write down the, you know, some things that happened to me early. And what it was I became friends with a player called Vida Blue. And Vida Blue was a guy that I kind of looked up to as a young man, young player. He was with the Oakland A's.
Okay.
And they were winning in the 70s, and I liked their uniforms, and I just liked the way he pitched. So I followed him, and that's how I kind of got into it, by meeting other people through Vida.
Through Vida Blue.
Mm-hmm.
So was it more, it wasn't a locker room thing, it was more socializing?
Social. I mean, back in the 80s, the beginning of the 80s, I mean, it was like part of life. Everybody was doing it, it seemed like. You know, you're young, you want to go out after a game, you want to have a couple drinks, and then someone says, here, snort a line, do this, do that, and next thing you know, that's part of your everyday life.
So it was a peer pressure thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Peer pressure and not wanting to be the guy that wasn't doing it. And also, in the major leagues, when I first got there, they put 5 vodka and orange juices on the table. And they said, okay, Rook, finish them. I didn't drink. By the second one, I was drunk, but I finished them. And then the next day, I had to face a guy named Nolan Ryan. So that was my initiation into the major leagues. Now, if I didn't accept that, I don't know what could have happened. They might not have taught me what they knew. They might not have accepted me into the club. So I drank them, and then from that point on, I just started drinking and smoking Salem cigarettes because Amos Otis smoked Salems, and he drank vodka and orange juice.
But Amos is good for Amos is good for you.
Yeah. Right, and that's how, you know, as a young man, you just followed all these guys around. And if they would go back and look at statistics in the major leagues, you would see guys that grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s. A lot of those guys that that played in the major leagues were alcoholics.
Well, I look at Babe Ruth.
Right.
And so you look at the fact that a lot of people, whether or not they knew they carried the component, the hereditary component,
right.
You know, there are 42 genetic markers that 90% of alcoholics and addicts carry. So
I think I got that.
So whether or not you probably a lot of times other generations didn't drink because
right.
they knew they were carrying that and they didn't really talk about it. They just didn't drink, and so you learned from that.
Right.
So you had this healthy upbringing not to drink, not to use drugs, and then but also the first time it's in your face, you think, hey, if I don't do this, I don't know what's going to happen.
True.
And
True.
And you know, we have a lot of young people today where that pressure to just conform to what everyone else is doing. And what would you say to people, what would you say to young athletes?
Well, not just young athletes, young people in general.
Yeah.
And I try to say it to my kids, and, you know, don't, you know, that old saying your mom says, well, so-and-so jumps off a cliff, you're going to jump off too?
Right.
And so that's the message I'm saying. You know, be your own person. Don't be afraid to say no.
Right.
And that's what a lot of kids are afraid. And that peer pressure, and I mean, I was in my 20s. And so, you know, when these kids are 15, 14, 13, I mean, those are years where they're very vulnerable. And so, and able to say no, you have to be pretty much a tough person. So don't be afraid, because later on in life, if they can see past that day or past that year, it's going to pay off for them.
One option now is to just say, I'm allergic, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But back then, that wouldn't have... I mean, I started using in the 80s also. Mm-hmm. And so when you said everyone was doing it, and everyone was.
Pretty
and
much.
It wasn't like a lot of people were... Everyone was doing it. It wasn't like a lot of people were, like, dying, or you thought, oh, I can do it, and I can get away with it.
Yeah, it was different. You know, if I wrote another book, and I could get a lot of people in trouble, but I don't want to do that. But the people that I could have gotten in trouble, they're clean and sober now. So it would be useless for me to do that. But everybody was doing it. I can remember one time I was doing it with a high-ranking official.
Wow.
And so it was, you know, you're saying to yourself, well,
right.
He's here. He's not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to get in trouble. So it was just a snowball effect. But eventually, you know, every time you do something like that, something's going to go wrong.
It gets worse. And so at what point, how much time into this, the using, the drinking, the drugs, did you realize? Was there a moment when you thought, I have a problem?
Yeah.
And I need to do something. At what point was that?
Well, there were two moments.
Okay.
And if you read the book, you know, in 84, I think it was 83, 84, when I got in trouble, I had not taken for over close to a year. I got in trouble by making a phone call for somebody else. And so when I made that phone call for somebody else, the person's phone was being tapped. And so that's how I got in trouble on that part. But the second time, it was going bankrupt, really just trying to destroy my life. I wasn't really wanting to be around here. And, you know, I kind of talked to God. And I was driving in my car one day, and high as a kite. And I just drove right to the hospital, checked myself in, and that was it.
And you had a conversation with God.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, you know, that's how I start my book off. And I was sitting in the bathroom contemplating life or death. And, you know, I was in a bad spot, wife leaving, losing your house, losing your money, losing everything, everything that you worked hard to get, but not really realizing that drugs are the cause of you losing all of it if you just basically put it in a nutshell. And so I said, in that bathroom sitting there, because it was the quietest spot in the house, I said, God, it's in your hands. And I heard a voice, and people might think I'm crazy or whatever, but the voice, and I get chills, and it said, you will be all right, my son.
Right.
And I opened my eyes, I looked around, I felt like the person was standing right next to me.
Right.
And then I felt like a weight went off my shoulders. The problems weren't gone, but the weight went off.
Exactly. And when I read that in your book, I could relate because I had struggled. My last year of drinking was literally a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I was hospitalized 7 times, intubated in the ICU. Right. And the day before I got sober, I drank not very much. I woke up that morning. It was February 8th, 2012. And same thing. It was a voice. And God said, It's done. You're done. And the same thing with the chills. And I never picked up again. And
it's amazing.
Gotten to rehabs. I had struggled. I'd gone to 12-step meetings. And it was that moment that I was humbled. And it wasn't necessarily a specific bottom for me. It was a moment where God came in for me and took that. So I related to that when I read your book. I thought, okay, and I've heard of other people. And my problems weren't gone. I didn't have custody of my children.
Right.
I had to get that back. I mean, I had to fight back for my life. But I knew it was going to be okay.
Yes.
And I knew I wasn't going to use again. I knew I wasn't going to pick up a drink again. And then that's where the battle begins. But, you know, you're tough.
Well, you would think you would be tough, but like you said, it's not easy. And it's a battle every day.
Right.
It's a battle not to, you know, go off and do something crazy when things are going wrong. But I know that every time I have those, and I call them crazy thoughts because they are crazy.
Right.
Something else comes into my life. Something else will come out and go, hey, let's go do this. And so you have a choice every day.
Right.
You have a choice. And so for me, you know, I'd rather make that right choice than that left, wrong choice. And so, you know, once God hit me like that, and I've always been spiritual. I've never thought I was religious.
Right.
You know, I was spiritual. But, you know, when I felt it, and I still feel it to this day. So it really does make me make a really good decision.
Right. So. And the overcoming, so you get to the point where you realize, now I've got to turn my life around.
Right.
I've got to work. I'm going to have to claw my way back.
Yes.
And so you start taking steps.
Yes.
In your recovery. And tell us a little bit about getting back to the city. And I think there were some things that you might have gotten back, important
yes,
things.
Yes, yes, yes. I left here in 2001 or 2002. I went to spring training with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And my wife at the time moved her and the kids up to Canada. I didn't have any place to go, so I just went up there. But I'd went to all these drug places, just trying to get my stuff together. And then when I got the baseball gig, I didn't go to any drug places, but I was off by myself, and that's dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
Know?
An addict in their own mind.
Right.
Yeah. Scary place.
But what it was, I just had time to think, and that really made me kind of figure out what I needed to do, and I needed not to be here.
Right.
I needed not to be around the people. I needed not to be on the same place. And so I left Canada, and that was a godsend, left to Canada, and because I didn't know anybody.
Right.
And for years, I just stayed there. And, I did little odd jobs, but I couldn't really do anything as far as make money because I wasn't a resident, first of all, and I didn't have a permit to work, and you got to go through all of that to be a resident alien, and I knew it was going to be hard, so I went to New Jersey, which was you go home.
You know? Don't we always end up going home? Right.
So I go to Jersey and I'm visiting my buddies who I know are going to stand by me and they're going to really, you know, make sure I'm going to be okay. And then one of my buddies asked me to give his kids a hitting lesson. And he couldn't make it, but his wife videotaped it. And that's how I started putting my life a little bit better, because I had to start working and I had to start arranging and I had to start making sure I was on time and I had to do everything. And so from that point, I just started doing camps with kids, and the kids made me feel like I was needed.
Right.
And so from that point, I did that for about 3 years in New Jersey, and I'd go back and forth, Canada, Jersey, Canada, Jersey.
Oh, wow. So you kept going back to Canada. Really quickly, for those of you just tuning in, my name's Cassandra Mitchell. I'm here with Liz Henry on Recovery Talk, Jaws of Justice Radio. We have our guests today are Willie Wilson, Royals Hall of Famer, and Hugh O'Donnell, Chairman of the Board at First Call. So for those of you who are coming in right now, we're talking to Willie, and he's telling us a little bit about his recovery story and his way back to life.
Yeah, and so, you know, once I had a guy working with me called Bobby Dinier. Bobby played for the Chicago Cubs and the Philadelphia Phillies, and he was my next-door neighbor, and he would do all the events with me. And Bobby's just a really good guy, and he was a guy that would talk sense to me.
Right.
He didn't lie to me. You know, he'd say, if you were a bad guy, he was going to tell you you're a bad guy.
Right.
And so I liked that. And so once I did successful in Jersey, he told me to come out here.
Come back.
Back to Raytown. And he would say, you know, they miss you there, the fans, this and that, because he's a resident of Raytown. And so I came back, started doing events for Raytown.
Okay.
And then that's how I just eased myself back into Kansas City, and I started doing stuff for the Negro Leagues, and then all of a sudden, years later, Hugh called me.
That's where we're at now. So tell us a little bit, Hugh, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and who you work with?
Sure. I'm an attorney and a mediator here in Kansas City, actually in Midtown here. I have been for 40 years. But I've also been involved with an organization called First Call, which is a recovery organization to help folks who want to get into recovery, and also to help the families of folks who have a problem, how to help the families to deal with that problem, and particularly how to help the children involved in those circumstances, as well as some prevention services. And I got involved with the organization on the board about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been involved with it for all that time, and I found it to be an extremely valuable gift for me to be able to give back. And an organization has helped countless people. And about 6 months ago, Willie and I have a mutual friend, and I knew about Willie's book, and I got contact information for Willie, and I just sent him an email. And I said, if you want to talk sometime, let's talk. And he called me immediately.
Wow.
And we started talking, and he's been involved with the golf tournament and some other things ever since then. And
yeah.
And we had a nice round of golf yesterday as well.
There you go. That's nice.
Will you go ahead and share? I don't think we've mentioned the name of your book. Go ahead and share a little bit about your book.
Well, it's called Inside the Park, and it's Running the Base Path of Life. And we were going to just make it Inside the Park, but, you know, I kind of wanted people to know that this is my life. And
right.
So we kind of mix running and base path and inside the park. So it was a pretty good idea, and it wasn't mine, but that's the name of the book. And it's just a book about my story, you know, just through my eyes, just seeing how, you know, and I didn't want to get on anybody. I didn't want to really, you know, say, well, I don't like this guy and I don't like that guy. What I was basically doing was saying, hey, everything that happened to me basically was my fault.
Good. Right. You know? Taking accountability.
Right. And, you know, and the drugs didn't help.
Right.
So, and just looking at it and seeing how that no matter how far you go down, that's as high as you can go too. So that's what I was basically trying to say to people. You know, you can be as low as low, but then also you can get your life back together if you really want to. And it doesn't matter how much, whether it's Because some people just can't go low enough. They
right.
have to die.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. There
so,
doesn't have to be that
right.
bottom.
So you're just trying to say to people, you know, just take accountability for what you do. And if you do that little steps at a time, not big steps, little steps, they become big steps, but do that. And that's all I wanted to do and let people know I'm okay.
Yeah. Can you, okay, how long were you addicted? How many years were you addicted?
Well, I'm still addicted.
Right.
Yeah,
how long?
Yeah.
Good, very good point. How long were you actively addicted?
1982 till now.
Okay.
Active addiction.
Yeah.
Well, no longer active.
Not active, but that's when I started. So.
And then when did you...
2000.
2000, you entered recovery. And then you went to rehabs.
Right.
And then did you use 12-step programs or not?
Yeah, I
didn't know what that was like for a professional athlete.
I didn't go all the time because sometimes I'd be on the road and I couldn't find this, but that's no excuse. But, no, I didn't use it like that. I was more so it was in here.
Right.
And I always felt like it's one thing to have somebody tell you, but if you don't do it yourself, it doesn't matter what that person tells you. So, but if I need to go and if I feel like I'm really in the – but I haven't felt like that in so long, but I'll go.
Right. I think for everyone, you know, recovery is different, and it's work. And I tell people it's not an easy...
No.
It's not an easy thing, and it's not an easy fix. And
no.
The wonderful thing about your book, and I think Liz and I talk about this, just sharing our stories, when we tell people... We were this low. This is what happened.
Yeah.
And you can get out of it. That's what people need to hear to turn it around.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of stories and it's always a sad ending.
Right.
And, you know, you just know that that's a news story, but there's so many more happy endings. And so we need to hear more of that so that we can get up and move.
Right. My brother, my older brother, I grew up in New York, and he calls me the comeback kid. And he said, Cassandra, everybody loves a comeback, and you're a comeback. And so I understand that. I mean, I think that's when Liz and I talk to people about our recovery,
right.
and they look at us now and say, surely that didn't. And yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
We were there, and it was life or death.
Yeah.
And we also talk about the fact that if we can recover, anyone
can.
Recover.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with me. It was difficult because first it was embarrassing for me. I mean, you know, here
you're
you
so
are,
public.
You're in the public eye, you're this and that. But I always felt like, well, I'm going bankrupt. Can't be more embarrassing than that. You know, I'm going through a divorce. It can't be more embarrassing than that. So, hey, I just accept it all and just move forward. And I think if you accept it all, you can move forward. You have to really accept it. And if you don't accept it, then you're just going to fight the good and bad, and that's not a good situation.
Right. So getting back to now, 6 months ago, you got involved with Hugh.
Yeah.
And First Call. And tell us what you guys are doing. You told us a little bit about what First Call does. What do you guys have coming up? You mentioned a golf tournament.
Yeah, the golf tournament is on June 23rd. Willie will be there and some other
players. Let's see, Al Fitzmaurice. Hopefully Frank will come. He said he has to check his schedule.
That's Jimmy Frank White.
Frank White. Jimmy Eisenreich. And hopefully Bobby Dennehr, but he might have something else to do that day. But I'm trying to get more and more players to be involved in it because it's a very special cause for especially me and Hugh. Yeah.
Right. We've got about 1 minute left. Will you tell people about the website that they can go to learn about giving back?
You bet. It's the phone number is 361-816-361-5900. The website is www.firstcallkc.org, and there is a specific link on the for the golf tournament. And anybody who wants to play and support and be there for a really good time.
And Swope, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, wow, gorgeous.
Swope's in good shape, people.
Come on out and play some golf for a really good cause, recovery here in Kansas City.
And meet Willie.
Yeah.
And meet Willie and some local celebrities.
And all the people that work for First Call. It really is a great organization.
Yeah, and we're great to have an organization like that here in Kansas City that's helping our community, and it's much needed. So will you give the phone number one more time?
Sure. It's 816-361-5900. And www.firstcallkc.org.
Okay, let's take a break, and we will be back in about 5 minutes with your calls.
Welcome to Recovery Talk on Jaws of Justice Radio. This is Liz Henry and Cassandra Mitchell, and our guests today are Willie Wilson and Hugh O'Donnell. We're now opening up for phone calls, so you're welcome to call in if you have any questions for any of us. The number is 816-931-5534.
816-931-5534. We welcome your phone calls. We're here with Willie Wilson, Hall of Famer, Royals player, and Hugh O'Donnell. We're talking about recovery here in Kansas City with our very own Willie Wilson, and we're also talking with Hugh O'Donnell about an event coming up for First Call. We've got a golf tournament raising money for First Call, which is prevention and awareness here in Kansas City, helping families. Hugh, will you tell us a little bit more about First Call again?
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure. There are a number of programs available at First Call. How to Cope is a program that's set up to help folks who's have a significant family member who has an addiction or alcohol problem. And the folks learn how to take care of themselves in those circumstances. We don't teach them how to fix the alcoholic because, as we all know, the only person that can do that is ourselves. And as Willie was talking about, help from perhaps a higher power might help.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
So I was going to ask, there was another program there, the Caring for Kids class. And Liz, will you tell us a little bit about that?
I helped out in the Caring for Kids class, and that was a great experience to see those young kids, even as young as 5 years old, learning about the disease of addiction.
I think we've got a caller, actually. Hello, you're on the air. What is your name, and what part of town are you calling from?
Robert Pearson. I'm Kansas City, Missouri.
How are you doing? You said Robert?
Yes, ma'am.
And who is your question for? Hello, Robert. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, and you?
Good, good. And who is your question for?
Actually, more is a comment for Willie Wilson and the other guests, you know, just to commend him on the courage of coming out and speaking honestly and truthful about his addiction and his recovery and where he's gone, because I believe that a lot of people need to hear that it is hope. You know, you can reach the bottom, but you can also pull yourself back up. And I think it's just a great, you know, I like to just commend him on his honesty and telling the truth about his addiction.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And I think everybody here appreciates that. And, you know, there is hope. And you sound like maybe you might be able to, you're not, are you trying to get hope yourself?
No, sir. I've been there myself, also recovering addict, and also ex-con, you know, who has pulled myself up from my downfall. And you know, similar, and I just love to hear the testimony of others who have reached that, you know, and I believe it's work also for me to do in this field. So I did take a First Call's website and their phone number, and I will be in contact with them there. What I can do to also help and get the word out to encourage those others.
Well, thanks, man. I think we all appreciate that.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Congratulations on your recovery, Robert.
Yes, thank you.
I guess the answer to his question about being honest, it has to be that way. In order for you to get better, you got, like I said, you got to be honest with yourself. And that's the most important person, because that's, you're going to recover yourself. But then you don't realize how many people you affect when you're under the influence or you're not. And it's so much better when you're not and you're able to communicate with your family, your kids, your neighbors, to go out and have some fun and not worry about thinking the fun is afterwards or something like that. The fun is playing the sport or doing something that you like to do, not to taking the drug.
A natural high.
Right.
And that's what we like to focus on. Again, the number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. We welcome your calls here with Willie Wilson, former Royals player, Hall of Fame. Liz Henry was telling us a little bit about the organization we've been talking about, First Call. Hugh O'Donnell, the chairman of the board, is here as well. Liz, you were talking about the Caring for Kids class that is offered there. And what does that do for children, do you think?
It teaches them about the disease of addiction and alcoholism. It teaches them that they are not responsible for the disease. It gives them a language so that they understand what's going on with their parent or their aunt or their uncle. And it was an amazing experience to watch a five-year-old say, the moderator said, "What's something you can't control in your house?" And the five-year-old said, "I can't control the alcoholism." And for a five-year-old to understand that at that deep level is a beautiful thing to see.
That is a beautiful thing. Okay, we've got another caller. You're on the air, caller. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from?
Charles Belcher from Overland Park.
Hi, Charles. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. Glad to have you on the air.
Yeah.
What question do you have and who is it for?
For Willie.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Yeah, the great Willie. What I respect about him, not only is an incredible baseball player, but an incredibly humble person. And what I respect about him, I'm a recovering addict myself. I used to take heroin. Now I'm on the methadone clinic and detoxing off that. So I'm just kind of, my fears are just kind of hope I don't get too depressed when I get off the medicine and able to cope with the, getting back to health again. So I wonder if you had any advice for me.
Well, I would think that if it's really hard not to think about the drug, but you can think a little bit different about all the other stuff. You're saying, I hope I'm not too tired. I hope I'm not doing this.
Depressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you can, I feel like if you can know that you're going to be a little depressed before you get depressed, then you can deal with it a little bit better.
Yeah.
But stay doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I was thinking about joining the gym so I could really get into it. You know, I'm a former football player myself, and getting back to working out, maybe that kind of will transfer my, into health.
Other things are good. I mean, there's other things in life that are just as a high as getting high.
Right.
And
try yoga.
Yeah.
Yoga is a great natural high.
Yeah, it is.
Well, see, I've been clean for like 9 years, don't get me wrong, but I've been on the medicine, and it's pretty hard to just stop. I tried once. I was so depressed. I was just in tears. I mean, it's hard to explain,
I'll share something that I'm also in recovery, and I'll share that what I've done is I do go to support groups. Mm-hmm. Because
right. It
helps me hear other people's story, and it helps me to be there for other people, because I know just sharing my story can help another person.
Right.
And getting outside of myself helps to lessen my depression, because I've been drug-free, alcohol-free, and medication-free for probably 12 years now.
Good job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
that. How long did it take you to feel like, once you quit the medicine, to feel acclimated to,
I think the first, I think the first couple years off of a medication, I had to depend on a group, and I had to depend on things like yoga and things like interval running to help keep my endorphins up.
Grounded. So you experienced a lot of depression for a couple of years, even?
Yes, I think my underlying mental illness that started before my drug addiction was depression. So I'm very, very aware of my depression and very aware of fighting it.
And some people still, I take a low dosage med for an antidepressant still. And I'm clean and sober. But I had that before I started into my drug and alcohol addiction.
Me too. That's my worry, that's my concern, I think that's why I self-medicated, just to kill the anxiety,
Yeah,
absolutely.
A lot of addicts and alcoholics do that. There's a dual diagnosis where they
the
self-medication thing. So,
the great Willie, man, it's just honored to be able to share a phone call with him. My Lord, what a respect.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that, but right now, more importantly, is that everybody gets healthy.
Yeah.
And so that's right.
I've been going to counseling. I sought professional help. You know, but like I say, my next step is, I'm detoxing off this medicine, and just a little concern, you know, about trying to not feel bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand that. But you know that you're taking the right steps, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah, make sure you talk to your doctors, because they know better than any of us do. Your doctors will get you on the right path. And
Well, I know one guy, he's kind of scared me. He said, it'll take 5 years, look it up on the Internet, to even get undepressed. I'm like, oh, my God.
I would encourage you not to live in the fear. Definitely live in the hope. And know that there are 12-step support groups where you have lots of experience, strength, and hope in those rooms, and people have gone through the same. And that kind of community can really help you get out of your own head and live in the hope and live in the solution.
Well, that sounds good. I appreciate all your advice, you guys, and all the hope. It's fulfilling. Thank you very much.
We'll keep you in our prayers. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
You have a
good
day.
Good job, Willie. Good to hear from you, man.
Thanks, man.
Fan for always. Take care, man. Love.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Again, the call-in number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Willie Wilson is here, welcomes your questions, and we are back to talking about recovery and specifically First Call and what they're doing in the community and their upcoming event with their golf tournament. So tell us a little bit about when what the awareness that's raised, what the purpose of this tournament is.
Well, that would be the purpose. It would be to raise the awareness, let more people know about recovery and the resources that are available through First Call. And another important component of the golf tournament is to have fun, which is part of what recovery is about.
True. Exactly. Right? Learning how to have fun naturally.
Naturally.
In fact, it's a big part of what recovery is about.
Yeah.
We are not a glum lot, as they say.
And, you know, it's fun, though. I mean, you know, I know this, I can't think of his name, the last caller, but...
Charles.
He was thinking so much about the negative, and that's just normal.
That is.
But, find something like golf or find something that, you know, he can really do, and that's what I do.
We've got another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm Richard Tripp. I live here in Kansas City.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. I wanted to tell you another story on I used to be an alcoholic. And I was drinking roughly 3-4 pints of whiskey a day and working every day until my esophagus blew up one day, the veins in my throat.
Wow.
And I ended up in Truman Medical Center.
Wow.
And, you know, they put me on all the machines and run all the tubes in me and everything. And I remember looking up at the doctor. She was a cute little blonde. I said, "Hey, doc. You don't die from something like this, do you?" Because I was passing blood. I mean, dumping, just throwing up blood like crazy. And she looks down at me and she says, "If we can't stop the bleeding, you do." Well, that's the last thing I remember. I passed out and I was in a coma for 38 days.
Wow. Wow. So you had a very, that's a bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I wake up out of a coma.
Okay.
And the doctor walks over to me, and I, you know, I couldn't speak because they had cut my throat and put in a tube for me to breathe.
You were intubated,
And she looks down at me, and, you know, I got her to give me a paper, and I says, "What's going on?" And she looks down, and she says, "Mr. Tripp, I have no idea why God let you live through this."
Wow.
But I do know this, Mr. Tripp. If you ever come in my ER again and you've got the smell of alcohol on you, the next time you wake up out of a coma, there's going to be some parts where they shouldn't ought to be.
So
that was roughly 40 years ago.
Wow.
And I can be around people that are drinking. I can go in bars. I can do all this stuff. But I will not touch it because, personally, every time I see the booze, there's something in my mind that says, you don't want that. Or I remember the throwing up of blood that was in. Anyway, I've been sober for 40 years because of that doctor.
That's awesome.
She got me right at the right time and told me the right thing. And I pray for her. I don't even remember her name, but I guarantee you, she saved me. And because of what she's done, I've been able to go on with my life and do what I do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is great, man. Her and God, I think God gave her some words
right.
to give to you. It wasn't your turn yet, man.
Yeah.
She caught me right at the right time.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, because it's great for people to hear that you're living 40 years in recovery.
Yeah, that's a really, really, really long time.
Okay, thank you.
So thanks for calling in.
Uh-huh.
Good story.
Great story.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, 40 years in recovery. And you do hear a lot about people ask, and like you said, we always have the disease. The disease
right.
doesn't go away. It's in, I call it basically remission. I'm still an alcoholic. I just am clean. I don't drink. And recovery and sobriety is just, it's a beautiful thing.
It's fun.
It is fun. It's
fun.
Challenging and it's fun.
And it I think the first caller said the biggest thing that I think, Willie, you give to this town, you give to people, is that hope.
Yes. Well, you know, I always felt like, you know, here's a guy that's gone 40 years and had this crazy operation, but because he's not in the spotlight, he can't probably get through to a few people. So for me, being in the spotlight and having them see me and having them see what I've gone through, I always felt like, not always, but over the last few years, you know, I was trying to get away from the spotlight. Now I'm taking it in and I'm trying to help, and I feel so much better. And I just know that alcohol, drugs, they don't discriminate. I mean, that's the only thing I really know that doesn't. So it can be man, woman, it'll get you. So, you know, I'm just happy to be able to spread the word.
The phone number again is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. We welcome your calls. Willie
How
Wilson.
Much longer do we have for calls?
Got about 7 more minutes for your phone calls, 816-931-5534, here with Hall of Famer Willie Wilson. So, Willie, you're talking about your recovery, and we're talking about the hope, and the hope that you're giving to people, I think, is huge in that we're trying to put some light on the stigma. We're trying to put some light on the disease of alcoholism and addiction, and that people shouldn't be ashamed and that they need help to go get help.
And that's where a lot of people don't get help, because they're ashamed. They're embarrassed. And I always look at it, I was like that too. I mean, it took me a long time to really go in. And I feel now that it doesn't matter, you know, what you do or how high up you are, your main purpose is to get help and get healthy. And the embarrassment, it comes with the territory. And for me to let people see that I've met presidents, I've met an emperor of Japan.
Wow.
But, you know, it comes down to, you know, drugs doesn't matter who you met and what and this and that. If you want to get healthy, you get healthy. And the embarrassment, you don't worry about the embarrassment. You just go do what you have to do. And what you realize is that there's a lot of people out there like us.
There's a lot of people.
There's
right.
a
there
lot
are,
of
every
people.
Family has an addict
yeah.
or two or three.
We've
yeah.
got it. When you said about the embarrassment part, Liz and I talk a lot about that the disease of addiction is a disease. AMA 1957.
It's been categorized as a disease for before I was born,
right.
which sometimes that's just interesting to think about the embarrassment, because I never meet anybody that's embarrassed to have cancer. And so it's gotten to the point where I'm not embarrassed about being a recovering addict.
Right.
I'm incredibly grateful. I'm incredibly grateful to people like you who have the humility to use your celebrity, to use your fame to help people.
I'd be embarrassed the other way.
Yeah.
Right now. You know, I'd just be embarrassed if I was coked up here being high. So
right.
that's the embarrassment for me. Being sober is proud.
Yeah, and
you
know,
and that's, I feel proud.
Yeah. Right.
To be in recovery, to have this disease and to be in recovery and know that, you know, you didn't, like I said, you didn't ask for it. You didn't give it to yourself, and that, you know, there is hope. People do go into recovery, stay in long-term recovery. Mm-hmm. And long-term recovery is it just, for us, it's all a way of life. And it's something that other people can have. It's that hope, that calling into first call and talking with families and talking with our children and getting out the word that, you know, there's a chance, and everyone has a chance to get into recovery. There's no one that, you know, and no one has to go to the level of the bottom of the floor of the elevator. You can get off the elevator at any level and just say, I've had enough. You know, call into first call. Can you tell us the number again, Hugh?
Sure. It's 816-361-5900, and the website is www.firstcallkc.org.
I want to know what Hugh is recovering from.
Well, I'm recovering from many things, but well, the reason I'm in recovery is because of alcohol and drug use earlier in my life. And you've talked about long-term recovery, and I've been in recovery. I just celebrated 30 years.
Wow. Awesome.
Congratulations.
And I remember 15 years ago when that happened to somebody that I knew and was very, very impressed with. I thought, that could never happen.
Right.
And it does happen.
Yeah.
And so it's a non-discriminating disease. You know, I know people in recovery who are bankers and politicians and people like Willie, professional athletes. And it's time for all of us to announce that. So I'm speaking for myself.
Yeah. No, and it's time to have our voices heard. But we're out of time, folks. We want to thank you, Willie.
Well, no
thank
problem.
You thank so you so much.
Hugh, for both coming on here. And, again, First Call, the website is www.firstcallkc.org.
Right.
And check out Willie's book.
That's right.
Tell us about your book.
Inside the Park, Running the Base Path of Life.
Thanks, Willie.
Ready? One. 2, 3. Sitting here in my prime, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events or a link to our show episode and podcast on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at www.kkfi.org or at 90.1 FM. My name is Lee Moore, and we thank our engineer, Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m. followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.
Make myself a better man.
fall down, I'm gonna get back up. It'll be alright, it'll be okay. Well, I'm gonna make my world a better place. Go keep that smile on my face. Go teach myself how to understand. Go make myself a better man.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Tell us a little bit about Michael Skolnick and the work you do.
I have been working for Russell Simmons for the past 5 years. I made a film on Russell in my previous sort of career. I was a filmmaker. I made a film on Russell and many involved in the fight to end the Rockefeller drug laws here in New York State many years ago, that included the Drug Policy Alliance and Mothers of the Disappeared, I film, and families, of course, who have been affected and destroyed by these drug laws here in New York. And I'm serving as political director to Russell Simmons and also the editor-in-chief and president of a website that Russell owns called GlobalGrind.com.
Now, Michael, the fact of the matter is you're a young man with many talents, a lot of great contacts, apparently, and... just this past week, you had a chance to sit down with our president, Barack Obama, correct?
I did have a chance to see him, yes.
And the email I saw indicated that he's not going to back down from his stance taken, if you will. That is, he is going to try to undo some of the harms of this drug war, correct?
As I'm sure many of your listeners and folks who read your work have been passionate about this issue for a very long time. I think that we all recognize, you know, we're hearing it more and more from politicians, from celebrities, from advocates, from families, that this drug war has been a horrible and just horrendous failure to this country and should never have been waged in the first place. I think the president and the attorney general shared that commitment. I mean, the president in 2007 said the drug war had failed, and we had hoped over the course of the beginning of his presidency that he would address many of the issues that have affected communities across this country in relation to the drug war, but I think there were some other things he was distracted by and priorities and health care, but we have been incredibly impressed and certainly have been encouraged by the past 12 to 18 months of the actions the president has taken and the attorney general. I had a chance to speak to the president this week in person at the White House, and he assured me that his work is certainly not done on this issue. He is committed more than ever to do more, and I think whatever he said to me is sort of meaningless in terms of what his actions are, but I think many of us in this fight have been, you know, impressed in the past year by his actions and what the administration has done, and certainly want him and his administration and Congress to do more. But we're definitely chipping away at this at the way we're supposed to.
Part two tomorrow. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.